Penguin Random House Canada presents Mother Love by L.R. Wright. Read for you by Peter Outerbridge, Kristen Krug, Jonna Wright, Sheldon Elter, Veronica Ortiguela, Derek Kwan, and Jacob McInnes. This book is for my friends, Nancy Hardy and Bill Banting.
Prologue.
It was a few days before Christmas. She woke in the night, shivering with cold from a fitful sleep. She tried to guess the time without looking at the clock ticking from the orange crate that served as her bedside table. The clock sat in the center of a lace doily she had crocheted herself, in front of the coal oil lamp and next to a box of wooden matches. She lay on her back, the covers up to her chin, next to her sleeping husband, and watched her breath make the air in front of her face visible. It wasn't the first night she had awakened. It was the third, maybe the fourth night that week. She carried exhaustion into each day. Each morning it was deeper and more profound. She knew where it could lead her, and she was afraid. Stretched flat on her back, she clutched the bedclothes in both hands and struggled with escalating panic. She focused her mind upon comfortable, comforting things, trying to soothe herself. She thought about the rag rug on the floor beside the bed, and her slippers sitting there, and the chenille robe that was hung over the back of a wooden chair next to the dresser. She had been advised to take deep, slow breaths on these occasions, and she did this, concentrating on the expansion and contraction of her lungs. But the tension remained. It was in her limbs, caught there in bone and muscle. And it was in her head, too. It had seized her brain, had taken hold of it, like her own fist around an orange or a child's hand. She fought to keep control of her breathing, a tiny island of self-dominance that, with concentration, she could perhaps make larger and larger until her entire physical body would be under her command and she could force herself to sleep, to be calm, to be loving. Terror scurried through her blood. She found herself sitting upright. She swung her legs out of bed, and in an instant she was out the bedroom door. She made her way along the hall, touching the walls with outstretched hands, her bare feet cold on the bare floor, passing the bedrooms of her children, and went quickly and soundlessly down the stairs and into the kitchen. The stove slumbered, banked for the night but still glowing, and in its faint light she saw her breath like tattered fog. She walked back and forth across the braided rug that lay between the stove and the wooden table where the family ate. She was rubbing her palms together and then making washing motions, all the while pacing, pacing. Then she stood still and touched her cheeks and discovered that she was weeping. She sat at the table and rested her head on her hands. "Please, please," she whispered. "Help me, please." She was aware of the instant of her capitulation. It did indeed feel like the final link breaking. It was like letting go of a tree branch or ceasing to cling to a rock face. It was acceptance of failure, and with it came a precious instant of relief. This was followed by utter blankness. She would not remember, later, the things she did then. The present. 1. Abbotsford, B.C. Maria Boscombe's eyes opened, and she looked, unseeing, at the ceiling, cautiously assessing the day. The light coming through the curtain at the small, high window in her bedroom shone with the bright confidence of an unclouded sun. There was an expectant quality to this morning light, a brittle anxiety. She turned her head to look directly at the window, and in the second it took her to move her gaze, Maria captured the moment, the day, and all traces of slumber vanished. She became rigid, breathless. It was the 28th day of September, and she had made a decision in the night. Maria came from the prairies and remembered from her childhood red geraniums on a kitchen windowsill and a snowy landscape beyond. Maria grew up in Winnipeg, a city in the middle of the province of Manitoba, in the middle of Canada, halfway between the Atlantic and Pacific coasts. She realized that she had been immersing herself on a regular basis lately in childhood memories that were fraudulent yet real, burrowing into a far-off past in the ever more futile hope of continuing to avoid the nearer one. She threw back the covers and sat on the edge of her bed for a moment. Her left foot was bisected by a sliver of light cast upon the rough green indoor-outdoor carpeting by the space between the window ledge and the bottom of the curtain. It was a half day of waiting, that was all. There was no cause for anxiety. She had had other days just like it. But this one was different. This one had made itself significant. She washed and dressed herself and combed her hair and made some breakfast, which she couldn't eat. Maria, waiting, watching the clock, noting the slow rise of tension in her body, remembered summer hollyhocks taller than she, and bees drunk with pollen, bumping dizzily in and out of the blossoms. She lived now in a small, dim apartment in the basement of a house in Abbotsford, a town 40 miles east of Vancouver. The house was owned by an elderly woman, who, along with her large, kindly dog, occupied the upstairs. Maria liked it that she was elderly and had taken a motherly interest in her tenant. It made her feel young by contrast. She moved around her apartment, picking things up and putting them down, trying to divest herself of a gathering excitement. She must not allow herself, yet, to think ahead. Once again, she nudged the future aside with remembrances. In Manitoba, September was an eye blink. Leaves felt the chill of autumn and turned in confusion, turned red and gold, turned to admire themselves, became detached from their trees and fluttered to the ground, dead. And new clothes for school. Maria remembered that about September, too. In Winnipeg in grade 2, she had had to wear a uniform. A navy blue jumper, a long-sleeved white shirt, navy blue socks, a navy blue tie, even navy blue bloomers. And a Red River coat, which was navy blue with a red lining and had a hood. As the morning passed, Maria could almost see the accretion of her anticipation building upon itself like layers of oil paint upon a canvas or plaster upon a wall. Sometimes in Manitoba, Easter came late enough to coincide with spring, and she could wear her new black patent leather shoes with buckles to church on Easter Sunday. Then Maria sprang along the street, bootless, her feet light as sparkling dreams, dancing between the puddles and getting not a single spot of mud on her shoes, which her mother had cleaned with Vaseline. That was perhaps not a genuine memory, the Vaseline, but something she had just now invented. It was very difficult sometimes to separate real things from events she had partially manufactured, things she had made neat or meaningful in retrospect. Maria's apartment comprised a long, narrow living room with no windows, the bedroom, and a kitchen with a table and two chairs at one end and stove and refrigerator and counters at the other. The kitchen, like the bedroom, had one small window. A door led from the living room directly outdoors into the backyard, where sidewalks extended from either side of a small patio and curved around the house to the street. The sidewalk that Maria used passed beneath the elderly woman's bedroom window. A second door in her apartment gave access to the basement laundry room. The elderly woman kept her outside doors locked, but not the one at the top of the basement stairs. Maria kept both of hers locked, always, even when she was at home. Oh, those geraniums on the windowsill. They had had thick stems and had lived for years in the same pots. Even when they weren't blooming, they were comforting, a familiar...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?